thank you, Dave. We'll now start the question and answer session with the questions posted online, and then if we get through those, I'll open up the phone lines. Dave, I'll just start with a few questions for you since you just wrapped up. Does a Twic card stay with the driver or the trucking company?
It stays with the driver. You do register what company you're with at the time, but it stays with the driver.
Okay. And why are the Twic cards unique to a particular port? Do you need to have multiple cards then?
Well, the Twic card's universal for all the ports, but each port, like Port of Tampa or Port of Miami, might have different access levels throughout their port. So then that's when they require their own card, because the Twic card can't accommodate that. Okay, when you come into Miami, you're restricted to this area, but we allow you to go into these areas. So that's why they come up with their own port cards as well, which is to keep order of who's supposed to be in what areas of the port.
Okay, thank you. We'll just kind of go backwards through the presenters here. Barb, a question for you. Are railroads more resilient than highways to adverse weather?
Yeah, I can't speak for all railroads, but I know that on the West Coast, BNSF and UP are expert at maintaining their systems. They have a very strong rationale to do that. They're going to lose millions of dollars an hour if they cannot continue to deliver their goods. So if we can get them access to the rail lines, they are certainly very fast and very good at reopening. The highway system, you know, I salute my brothers and sisters out in the field. They do an incredible job at reopening, but it can be some length of time if there's actual, of course, damage to the road.
Okay, and I believe this next one's for you as well. I didn't note down which slide it was in reference to, but and actually, let me just jump down. Hold on a second. Did analysis suggest additional diesel terminals be established?
No, and it wouldn't be our role. What the analysis suggested was that, again, the diesel terminal racks, because of our the way our system is built, it's very reliant on barge as well as pipeline. We've got pipelines coming in from the east and down from the north. So if there is a highway disruption in the central part of the state, there is not a significant impact on the last mile delivery of that diesel product.
Okay. And is the resiliency plan part of a larger freight goods movement plan, or is it a standalone strategy?
I'd say, again, it's part of that larger framework that we think about. When I come back to identifying your customers first, targeting those customers with strategies that serve their needs, that is the basis of our state freight plan. That's the basis of our operational improvement plans as well as our capital investment plans. The resiliency sort of started out as a hobby job for me, but because we have continued weather, we get to practice recovery from our major freight highway corridors on a regular basis and have developed these services.
Okay, thank you. We'll now move on to some questions for Joe. Are there any sources of research or documentation that correlates the impacts? Sorry, every time a new question comes in, I lose my place. Are there any sources of research or documentation that correlates the impacts, especially economic impacts, mentioned today with the impacts of long-term growth of system bottleneck and choke point? Sure, let's see here. We will...
Yeah, this is Joe.
Sorry.
I think I wasn't connected for a while.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. the question was about... all of the information we used was based on formulas that are due... based on highway construction. So this is, we're looking at delay, you know, we're not looking at long-term delay, we're looking at delay due to construction. Like, let's say if you have a construction project for 2 years, these formulas were developed for that type of a project, the impact of delay of something like that, that was infrequent, not the impact of people actually changing their routes, where I see the point is if you had a long downtime of 12 months to a year or a year, people, you would actually have new patterns developing, which that's not built into the formulas.
Okay. And how do you consider in your analysis the amount of non-critical discretionary travel that falls off in the event of natural or man-made disasters?
Okay, well, one thing, when we talk about discretionary travel, we are using average daily numbers. So we don't have any peak holiday periods in there or anything like that in these average daily numbers. But I have to say that looking at the data after 9/11 and the transportation between New York and New Jersey, we definitely see that people are more fungible than goods. That people found different ways to get into work by taking rail instead of driving. And actually, there was a lot less traffic on some of the bridges because of that, which opens them up more to cargo. So there should be some thoughts that since in essence there's more resiliency for passenger travel than there is for freight, that in an emergency, an emphasis could be put on reducing the passenger traffic and having them use mass transit systems, especially in urban areas.
Okay.
And that would open things up more for freight.
And the next question for you, how did your risk system take into account sea level increases?
Well, in terms of sea level increases, when we look at extreme events, we're really thinking, too, of climate change, because we see much heavier rain events, washouts, things like that. In terms of sea level change, it's not really in our numbers, but it does come into those bridges that are the only bridge that connects to some of these coastal areas where there could be large flooding. A lot of times in those types of events, though, you have very, very adequate notice for evacuation. So the fact that a lot of these are the 70% were evacuation routes tells us a lot of these routes could be affected by the sea level rise, too, over time.
Okay, thank you. We have another question for Dave. Is there a process in place to verify the information on the 10-2 reports?
You basically have to give it to the best of your knowledge. Some of it's very difficult to get, depending on what parts of the country. But it's, from talking to people that actually do that day to day, you have to give it the best information you can possibly get. And to say this is the best information I can get, and if it gets rejected, then you have to go back and get more. But the customs does give you a little bit of leeway, with the information you're providing. You have to provide the best. You have to provide them with the best of your knowledge.
Okay. And another question for you: don't the marine shipping lines have some diversion contingency plans whereby they will route ships to other West Coast ports if there's an incident or disruption at a specific port?
I would imagine there's a plan there. I don't have that type of information.
Okay. We have a question that I actually will put out to all three speakers. And the person with the question said that all three of you had excellent points about freight security. Do you have any additional thoughts on the broader field of transportation security planning? I'll just start in the same order as presentations. Joe, if you have any thoughts on that.
Well, in terms of freight security, one of the big concerns is for freight security is the rail freight, because rail freight routes are very limited. We see that over time, our rail line, our track beds have disappeared, and we only have track beds where there are single routes that serve certain areas. So what happens there is any hazard. The big concern with security there is the hazardous materials that are transported. And with hazardous materials, it's a lot easier to route them around critical cities and stuff with highways than it is with rail. And that's one of my biggest concerns is the safety of hazardous materials being transported through major urban areas. I think that's something that needs a lot more analysis and work.
Okay, Barbara, we'll go to you next.
I'm not a transportation security planning expert. I would just note that, so I'm going to defer to Joe here. At least in our state, and perhaps in others, there is no highway redundancy either. So you've got the wonderful sort of almost a spider web of highway connections on the East Coast and in some other states, and we do not. So we can't count on redundancy out here for highway or for rail.
Okay, and Dave, anything?
No, you know, when there is a disaster going on in the area, we're quick to pick up the phone and talk to state DOT and find out what's going on, what roads are closed. Like I said, when you're putting the relief goods into an area, it's crucial that they're not stuck behind a bridge that's been washed out or you know, some infrastructure problems in that area. So we just try to get all the information we can so we can keep the trucks rolling.
Okay, thank you. Barbara, we have another question for you. What role do the MPOs play in the development of the Washington State Plan?
They're very helpful, and in particular in a couple of ways. One is in the debriefings that we hold after each storm season and disruptions. The MPOs in the affected areas have been able to represent counties and local governments' interests and help us understand how the highway detours and lack of detours and reroutes to their communities impact them. And so having a strong working relationship with them, again, is just absolutely critical. And the kind of information they come back with, that local street knowledge, is very, very important to us in our planning, I would say. And they're also a beneficiary of having more clarity in the plan. Some of the MPOs on the I-5 corridor have been very progressive and advanced in terms of, you know, setting up pre-existing detours for highway disruptions, and some, you know, just haven't taken those steps yet. So,
okay, thank you. Joe, we have another question for you. You just mentioned the dangers of shipping hazardous materials through metropolitan areas. Do you know of any projects for new infrastructure that have emerged?
I don't know of any, but I do know that all of these routes are very closely scrutinized, and the all of the rail lines have taken extreme measures to increase safety in those areas. But that's still an area that, if we're planning new routes, we should be thinking of that. Of there are some routes where you will always have certain hazardous materials traveling on them, and we should really be thinking of rerouting them in areas where there's lower populations. But the current practice I know of is that extreme care is taken on these routes to actually monitor those movements and keep close track of them and actually monitor any kind of behavior that takes place around those routes. So there is a lot being done, but it's what this does is you have a high operating cost to do that, to keep doing that, whereas you'd want to lower that cost by building some new routes where you could reroute it in certain areas where people are less vulnerable to a hazard.
Okay. We don't have anything else typed in right now, so we'll go ahead and open the phone lines for any questions, but in the meantime, feel free to continue typing in questions. Ben, if you can give instructions on how to ask questions over the phone.
Okay, thank you. In order to ask a question, please press star 1 on your phone. Please unmute your phone and record your first and last name when prompted. To withdraw your question, you'll press star 2. Once again, in order to ask a question, please press star 1. One moment, please. No questions on the phone line.
Okay. Well, if we don't have any questions, we'll go ahead and close out a little bit early today. I'll give you a few more seconds here if you type anything in. But in the meantime, I do want to thank everybody for attending today's seminar and thank all three presenters for your great presentations. The recording and the PowerPoints and the transcript will be online within the next few weeks, and I'll send out an email when those become available. As a reminder, if you're an AICP member and would like to receive 1.5 certification maintenance credits for attending today's seminar, please make sure you are either signed in today with your first and last name, or if you weren't, type your name into the chat box as well as your organization. Please download the evaluation form and email it to me after you've completed it. And then also download the CM credit instructions if you're unsure of how to obtain your credits for today's seminar. I also want to mention that FHWA's Freight website has been recently updated and enhanced to make it more user-friendly and information easier to find. I'll type the website address into the chat area, but I encourage you to go to it and visit it for freight information. The next seminar will be held on December 16th and will be about freight fee structures. If you haven't done so already, I encourage you to visit the Talking Freight website and sign up for this seminar. And the address, I'll put the slide back up on the screen in a second. And I also encourage you to join the Freight Planning Listserv if you haven't already done so. In addition, the January seminar should be posted within the next few weeks, and I'll send an email out through the listserv once that seminar is open for registration. So thank you, everybody, and enjoy the rest of your day.